It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and Vermonters making a difference. WCAX presents 802 News with Mark Johnson. Here's Mark.
Progressive Emma Mulvaney Stanek was the first candidate to declare she wants to succeed outgoing Burlington Mayor Moreau Weinberger. Mulvaney Stanek served on the City Council in the Queen City from 2009 to 2012 and is currently serving her second term in the Vermont Legislature, where she chairs the House Progressive Caucus. The mayoral election will be held in March. Democrats Karen Paul and Joan Shannon are also running. In this edition of 802 News, sponsored in part by Red Hen Baking Company, I spoke with Mulvaney Stanek shortly after she announced her bid. We focused on many of the issues facing the Queen City, in particular, the opioid crisis. I have heard a number of people say, why on earth would anybody want to be mayor of Burlington these days? How would you respond to that?
Well, it's a very important question. I asked myself that throughout the summer when I started to think about this. It is a really challenging time in Burlington, and I am a mom of two small kids. I'm fully invested in this community. I've been here for almost 20 years, and I really have been very disillusioned by how divisive also politics has become on a local level. And I serve in the state legislature now, and I really realize how important it is to provide a different alternative to how we lead the city forward, one that really puts people at the center of it, that brings collaboration forward rather than divisive finger pointing around how to solve these really complex, nuanced problems that we're facing. And then really a different perspective of someone who's trying to raise a young family, afford to stay here, make sure my kids feel safe and are safe in this community. And so all these things I was toying with this or really grappling with this summer, and I realized this was a moment to move from my state level policy work and come back to local policy work. I used to serve on the city council, so I'm familiar with the systems. And it's just in my life and my career, public service is an incredibly important piece of my career and sort of my value base. And I wanted to make sure that I was at least offering what I could offer in terms of a vision of how else we can do this, how we can really restore a bit of hope and vision back to what Burlington could be and it has been in the past. But really building off our strengths of when we come together and collaborate to solve problems, that's how what moves us forward. And so hopefully this is what will resonate with voters as we look towards March.
So you actually decided to run before Moreau decided to not seek re-election.
I did, actually. I mean, that's how worried I've been, frankly, about the direction the city's been going in. The divisive nature from all parties, but with how the mayor's office has really been not collaborating with city council, I've been watching this for a while. And so sitting there, the usual, you know, 3 years is up and wondering what he would do, wondering who else would step forward. But a question I often encourage other people thinking for running for office, there's never a perfect time. There's never a perfect opportunity. And I was so concerned that I was getting very ready to run regardless of whether he decided to step away from the role or not.
Let's talk about, jump ahead here and talk about some of that divisiveness. There are four progressives on the city council. Granted, there are elections coming up in 8 of the 12 seats. But how, if you're elected, are you going to be able to work with the Democratic plurality?
So I have always been in a super, super minority in terms of numbers of progressives where I've served. So when I first was elected to city council in 2009, I was one of two, maybe three, and then I became the only city councilor who was a progressive in a body of 14 at the time. And we were in the throes of Burlington Telecom. It was a really rough time to be on city council in general. I cut my teeth, really, frankly, knowing how to, trying to learn how to govern in crisis with trying to bring the community back, back from that very divisive place. And so the only way that, frankly, a healthy democracy exists is where elected folks learn the art of collaboration, the art of compromise, and frankly, the fundamentals of why relationships matter and why you need to take the time to build that. No one should come in with their agenda. It's not how democracy is designed, where they just try to push that through no matter what, whether you have a supermajority or the mayor's office or what it might be. And in Montpelier, where I serve in the State House, I'm one of a 5-member House Caucus of Progressives, and we're in a body of 150. There is no way in the world that you will be effective if you choose divisive, polarizing positions. And I would say that for any party, for that matter. You become ineffective. And so I really have, over that course of my career, understood and put sort of my values forward, which is around collaboration, which is about building those relationships and trust. And I've worked really well, I think, on the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee, which is where I've served the last 3 years, which arguably is the most moderate committee. It's chaired by a Republican from the Northeast Kingdom. And it's more moderate Democrats and a few Republicans on it before. And we pass most of our bills out unanimously. And I've put forward some pretty historic first time policy ideas, which are small P progressive, things like investing in BIPOC owned businesses, Black, Indigenous, people of color owned businesses in Vermont in intentional ways around economic development. I've put forward policies that try pilot programs. We do workforce development, so pilot programs to help people leaving incarceration to reintegrate back into the community with partner employers to make sure that they're set up for success. We did that in a big workforce bill. I led on that and unanimous support. So these are just a couple of examples of how when you take the time to build relationship and you take the time to actually deliberate together and really work through any differences and come back to a values-based place, in this case where we want Vermonters to be able to find livable wage jobs and be able to fill the needs we have in our workforce and also in terms of economic development, have all businesses thrive. When you can find those common goals, you can work through things that are different or different opinions, or frankly, sometimes when people haven't even thought about, you know, certain ways to view the world because it's not their lived experience. I think those are all things I have found successful in my policymaking, and I bring that forward in back to the city hall is to make sure that in the mayor's office, I would have an open door and collaborate with city council. It's an important partnership that I think has not been tended to well.
You've described how you would be able to work with them. How would you get them to work with you?
Well, that's a great question because it goes both ways, right? And so I think one of the first things that is important is that there be regular meetings outside of city council and that there be some advanced planning together with the city council president, with if there is, you know, sort of just leaders of the different caucuses of whichever parties are on the city council. Well, we're actually working out a general policy, I wouldn't say agenda, but like a policy, the list of policy items that we really need to be working on together and start that from the beginning instead of developing policy solutions only in the mayor's office and then bringing it to council 1 week before expecting people to vote on it. We have a lot of complex issues, regardless of what the topic is, that when you're a city council, you have no staff of your own. I've lived that. I live that as a legislator. You usually are working another job. There's a lot you're trying to manage, and then digesting things can really be a challenge when you are, you know, drinking from the fire hose, if you will, with all these different policy issues coming at you, and you have to be a generalist. So I think part of what the mayor's office can offer is partnering early, making sure people have the information they need, that we take the time we need to dive deeply in and deliberate on the impacts of whatever the policy question is or the problem we're trying to solve, and then ideally bring solutions forward that folks can agree on. Now, I don't think democracy is about consensus building either every single time, because sometimes there are going to be differences and there's plenty of room for that. But I think the process needs to feel good for everyone. And in Burlington, in the almost 20 years I've lived here, I feel like issues really fall apart when the community and elected folks don't feel like the process worked well. When communities were not engaged well, when people did not feel heard, those are elements that really start to undermine and create that unraveling of a sense of community. And that's what I would bring back. I've been a labor organizer, community organizer most of my life. Those are fundamentals of how you build a community that's strong and resilient and can weather really complex challenges like community safety and other things that are facing Burlington.
How do you have those meetings and not be in violation of, say, open meeting laws?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, transparency is another important value that I hold. And I think that's important regardless of whether I'm meeting with city councilors or department heads or stakeholders in the community. So certainly always being mindful of the numbers of city councilors in the room, if you will. And I think most of those meetings would be one-on-ones, I would imagine. But it's, again, about relationships, right? I want to make sure that city councilors know they could pick up the phone or stop in the mayor's office. And I would have time and prioritize meeting with them. They're an important part of leading the city forward. City councilors have an ear to the ground that the mayor won't be able to because I only live in a certain part of the city. And that's important information to be always bringing forward to everything that the city is considering.
Let's talk about the situation in Burlington. How would you describe it today?
Well, we have a lot of people who are openly suffering, literally in the streets of our city. We also have people who are feeling an increased sense of feeling unsafe. We have some people who are actually unsafe because of the realities of our housing crisis, the realities of the substance use disorder crisis that is facing the entire state and country, I would add. And we're really at a critical turning point. This election will be that moment where we decide what direction do we go forward to try to do something different. What we've been trying so far has not been working. It's not been sufficient. I think there are nuggets of good ideas that have been started so far. Some things that are just literally about to roll out or have rolled out, like the fire department's new pilot program for a slightly different response to send a smaller team to sort of triage and when there's an expected overdose. But we really need to turn a corner here and really center people most impacted, but also make sure that everyone in the city feels safe and responded to. And I also think that there's other bigger issues beyond community safety, of course, that are facing the city around the bigger issues of affordability. Are we going to lose the economic diversity we have in the city when pricing of housing in particular is so enormously out of scale with what people can afford? And then also the climate challenge that we're facing and our health of our lake, the realities of the health of our and our planet in general. But then these wild weather incidences, storms, et cetera, that are facing the state. We were lucky this summer in Burlington not to be dramatically impacted, like my hometown of Barrie City, for example. But it is stuff we have to actively be thinking about and responding to, and thinking as we take on big questions like what do we do with the McNeil plant? We have to be thinking forward around lining up what future generations need of us today, and not just thinking about in a short term, having a short term approach to things.
Tell me some other ideas you have to help the people that are suffering from substance abuse, and also residents who are very concerned about how things are going in the city.
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing is that the residents need to feel heard. I was talking about this before. There's a real importance about people's own lived experiences and quality of life. People need to know that city leadership cares about that. They need to know that people that care about their sense of safety. They need to know that there'll be someone who will respond in a moment of emergency or crisis or an act of crime happening. Our city response system is not adequate. When people call for help, they need the city to respond. And so we need to know what the appropriate response is, because I do think we need to reimagine how we viewed public safety. I've actually been talking about public safety in a broader sense of community safety, because there's a lot of elements that fall under in today's world, in today's Burlington, around what is making our community unsafe and that source of suffering I was talking about before. And we can't have just one single solution to resolve it or to fix this big challenge. So it can't be just policing and the number of police we have. Police have a very important part of this community safety response, but they're not the only part. We have a major housing issue where we have folks who are unhoused in the state legislature. This is a major worry and issue I held towards the end of the session, where we were about to push out hundreds of people off the motel program that the state had put up, the General Assistance Emergency Housing Program, through the motel program during COVID. And we just abruptly were about to end that program without an off ramp. And many of us were trying to sound the alarm that it would push people into the larger towns, Burlington included, with zero services, zero support, and push it all onto the community. I thought that was a wrong decision. I pushed it back against that. And during the veto session, we were able to leverage a bit of a better solution where there was a bit more folks pulled back into the program, but not everyone. And some people had been pushed out already. And we didn't also have any chance to really talk about other policies around camping policies, et cetera, on a state level. So again, it got all pushed to local communities to grapple with, without any money from the state, without any wraparound of realizing this is a Vermont problem, not just a Burlington problem. So I think that's part of the challenge ahead, is to convene stakeholders to figure out how can Burlington not only do its part on the local level, but leverage the state back to the table. And that's, I think, a major strength I bring to this role of mayor, is that I've served in the legislature. I have, again, relationships there. I know how the state functions. I've seen how when enough pressure is applied, that money can be found to bring people back into programs, to release and to make sure policy that is passed is implemented, for example. That's another struggle, which if we move into substance use disorder, another piece of this community safety challenge we have in the city, and again, everywhere in the state and everywhere in the country, that's another piece where I do think the city has done some decent work in that regard of really trying to grapple with the opioid crisis. As I mentioned before, the pilot program with the fire department. And we have to be leveraging the state again to be releasing opioid settlement fund dollars and having it flow so we can actually not only adequately address things in Burlington, but make sure there's enough treatment beds in the state. So when people have overdose and they do realize I want help, they need somewhere to be able to go, because otherwise there is no option except to release them back into that cycle of addiction. We need to also be thinking about other, I think, upstream solutions in particular, rather than just continuing to manage all of the problems downstream, which includes understanding that when people's basic needs are met, that creates safer communities. And I'm not Pollyanna about it whatsoever. I mean, that's a long-term strategy of understanding how the impacts of a loss of affordable housing or inability to find stable housing or the inability to find a job that pays a livable wage, that all makes it much harder for people to be able to live in healthy lives and thrive in Burlington. And also when people have an inability to access affordable health care and mental health goes untreated, that's where we start seeing another element of what's happening in our streets, where people are just openly suffering because they don't have the services and support they need. So I don't think, again, there's no single solution. So we have short-term things we have to address. We have medium-term things with the state. And then we have the longer-term policy solutions where we have to get serious about affordable housing. We have to get serious around workforce development and economic development that centers livable wage jobs with decent benefits. Otherwise, we're going to be constantly just pulling those babies out of that stream, if you will, which we'll just be chasing our tails. So it really takes a different vision and a different approach to really put those pieces together.
How adequately do you feel that the police are responding to some of these concerns that residents have?
Well, I don't think the response has been appropriate. When people have called, I mean, it's kind of just a common thing now where people say, I call the police, but they won't come, or I don't call the police because they won't come, or I don't call the police because I don't feel safe with police response in general, because they might, they are a queer person or a Black person, and they have a long history of feeling unsafe with policing in general, right? Long before our current situation. I think it fundamentally comes back to leadership and a lack of the setting the right tone and culture within the police department. That's a piece of it. I would expect from all city departments a culture where there is an expectation of service to the community, accountability for making sure that, when we are obligated to provide a city service, it performs as it should. People need to be responded to. But I also want creative leaders in parts of city government that inspire the best among the rank and file, if you will. I used to be a labor organizer. The rank and file within departments where they are brought to do their best work for the city, where they're encouraged to think creatively, where they're encouraged to think about community first, and not this divisive narrative that has sort of unfortunately grown in the city, where people are allowed to frankly not do the adequate job, which is making sure our city is safe. And it's not just the police. Like, I appreciate that we've started this community safety officer program, but these alternative models, right, to basically send a professional with the right skill set, with the right expertise to respond to the appropriate call. Because we should not be sending police officers to a mental health crisis call, right? They are not social workers. They're not trained as such. So I think we have to do more there, though, and think about other responses and other folks who should be part of that response. And I'm looking forward to engaging stakeholders, business owners, landlords, et cetera, neighbors, residents, families, parents, to really think creatively, again, creative thought about how to really solve and build a safer community together.
You have described accurately described a lot of the problems sort of upstream and downstream. But so what can somebody who's a mayor do about this?
Well, the mayor's office, especially in the city of Burlington, has the power to convene people. The mayor's office also has the ability to appoint department heads who can share a vision and move a city forward that's really trying to move towards collective goals that are heard from the residents. I think the mayor is also important to be someone who has a skill of listening and truly engaging the community. in ways that those who are on the front lines, so the staff who are you know, at the front lines in the fire department, the police department for that matter, but even parks department, folks who are interfacing with the people who are both residents and residents who are openly suffering because they're unhoused or in the throes of substance use disorder. The job is to really is to listen and engage folks, because most impacted folks usually have real solutions of how things can be better or what is really the cause, that upstream cause of all this suffering that's happening in our community. I think the other role that the mayor plays and needs to play better, I have not seen it played well, is having more of a presence and engagement with state government. I've served for 3 years. The city has had a very minimal presence in the state house, and so we're not leveraging the, frankly, the representative power that we have in terms of how many state representatives we have. We have 11 state representatives. We have 6 senators who cover Burlington. We're not coordinated or organized as we should be in that building, making sure that Burlington's interests are adequately represented and heard in the state house, and that we're also sending the right message that it's not just Burlington's problem to solve these issues we're facing. This is the state's problem. And frankly, if we can be supported in finding ways to lead the city forward, it's going to help all the other towns in Vermont find a way forward who don't have as many resources, don't have a full-time mayor, et cetera, going forward. So there's a lot of important roles that the mayor's job can play.
You talk about being listening and being a good listener. I think people are also looking for action, too.
Well, as a mom, I have to say, I am a very, you have to be as a mom of small kids, decisive, and have the ability to, you know, be a tenacious problem solver and really think things through. And, you know, I think my record both in this, in state government, as well as even my time as city council is I'm a deep thinker on things, but then eventually we have to move forward and make my policy happen. And I mentioned before, I'm a member of a very small caucus in the state house. I'm one of 5 in terms of progressives, but I'm one of 150 in terms of the state representatives. And I have found a way to move policy through amendments on bigger bills, collaboration within my own committee, to make sure that things are being I'm being responsive to things my constituents have told me to do, and that they need to have in terms of state government being more responsive to Vermonters' needs. One of the biggest ones has been the unemployment system, which is a policy area that House Commerce oversees. I think everyone who listens to this podcast knows someone or personally went through the unemployment system especially during COVID, and found how archaic and overly complex that program is, how hard it is to navigate as someone who's out of work, just simply trying to make a claim so they can get a little bit of economic support to bridge them to their next job. And so that policy area is very complicated, but I've been able to move some reforms and changes within that system, including finally a study that's going to look at modernizing that program and making sure people, when they have a loss of job, can have that economic support while they are, again, bridging. We have some limitations in sort of modern day reasons why people lose their jobs, because maybe they've lost their childcare. And so if you have young children and you have limited options, like actual physical options to put your kid into childcare due to affordability or lack of physical sites and spots, sometimes people have to, you know, lose their jobs, for example, or they get a long-term illness and they lose their job because they lose sick days, or they're supporting a family member who has a long-term illness. So those are areas, for example, that other states have expanded their unemployment systems to be able to support the current modern day realities facing working people. And I advanced policy and it passed and signed by the governor to study the expansion of our unemployment system in Montpelier. And I use that all as just an example of really emphasizing I come from an economic justice lens. I come from a working family background, and working people's issues are sort of my bread and butter issue, how I focus. And even in a building of 150 people, I've been able to advance policy that have put workers' rights and working people's issues forward.
We'll have more in a moment. At Red Hen Baking Company, they believe pure, uncomplicated ingredients in the hands of skilled artisans are the building blocks for great food. They're dedicated to creating the best food from the best ingredients. You'll find an ever-changing lineup of delicious pastries, sandwiches, and soups at their beautiful cafe off Route 2 in Middlesex, just off I-89. Their breads are also available in many other locations. Led by owners Randy George and Eliza Kane, Redhead Baking Company has been on the leading edge of the local food movement since 1999. Back to our discussion with Burlington mayoral candidate Emma Mulvaney Stanek. Let's go back to the opioid crisis. Safe injection sites make sense?
So overdose dose prevention sites is the phrase I use. And so those are critically important. I've actually been surprised how I'm on record. I've signed on to bills in the State House to support overdose prevention sites with all the others. It's, again, not a single solution issue. They need the wraparound services and the ability to have be coupled with other kinds of policy solutions. But I'm surprised, frankly, how much that topic has gained support. I think we are, the train is out of the station. People see this open suffering, and there is a quality of life issue for everyone involved here. The user of drugs, the person walking by the street, the kids who are playing in areas where needles are left behind. So I think that is a critical piece of it. And then I think we also have to look at needle recovery programs to make sure that we're also working with, because the needle, the safe needle system is so critically important for making sure people who are in addiction have access to clean needles, et cetera. And there's the backside of it where we need to make sure that there is a smart recovery system of those needles and that we couple that with overdose prevention sites.
There was an encampment site down on Pine Street that the city shut down. Would you allow encampment sites?
I think we need a smart camping policy in the city. I think we need to figure out, again, until the state is brought to the table to kind of come up with better housing solutions. And we have passed a few big housing bills to build new housing because we have for decades in Vermont not kept up with what we should have been doing in terms of building new physical housing units. So we're playing catch up. They don't get built overnight. And so while we wait for those to come online and for the state to grapple with what do we do in the interim in terms of emergency housing needs for folks who are unhoused, we have to at this point come up with a smarter camping policy for people. I again wish the state had done that so that we could be universal and consistent out throughout Chittenden County and the whole state. But again, in the void, if you will, of policymakers in the state level and the governor solving that, we have to think that way here in Burlington. So I think we need a place where people know they can go. We need to think creatively about some where we can have some of their basic needs met in terms of water and wastewater and whatnot access for folks to keep the site healthy. And that way we can, in theory, also make sure that we have people in a more organized space to be offering services and support. I've been encouraged, frankly, about the pods on Elmwood Avenue. I think that kind of model, I know there's a lot of activity outside of that pod, which again goes back to the larger systems we're talking about. But the pod itself, I think, is a move in the right direction. They are resource intensive for sure, but they help to bring people into a more structured and safe environment other than just camping on the side of Depot Street or wherever else people might go without an alternative.
As you were talking, I was wondering if you support the current police chief.
Well, it's a question I get asked a lot, and I go back to what I said before. I'm going to have high expectations of all department heads in the city, and there are going to be consistent expectations across the board around making sure that we have of department heads who are there for the right reasons, who can think creatively, who are about collaboration, who are about setting a culture and a tone within their departments of centering the community and being of service to the community. And I think we need to really also, someone in the police department in particular, leading the police department, needs to understand how critical it is for the police department to be part of a larger community safety response, play an active role in it, but not the only role, and really be able to think outside the box and listen and engage and rebuild trust that has been really broken in the city when we have an attitude where we just don't respond to certain calls and then finger point. If someone can get on board with that and really look to collaboration rather than divisiveness, then I welcome the opportunity to consider that person going forward in any city department in leadership. But if that's not their style or approach, then we may not be able to see eye to eye.
How is John Murad doing on that score?
I think that Chief Murad, at least what I've seen so far, has had some real challenges. I've not been able to see him think creatively. I also think that I'm curious how he responds in terms of being held accountable when there's a difference in his behavior or choices as a leader versus what the mayor's choice decision is on something, and if there's a difference there. And I really want to make sure that I'm not sure that his leadership style also aligns with everyone who works within the police department. So that will be something that will be interesting for me to learn going forward in selection, and then if elected, because I also want to make sure that there's trust and there's just trust and a good culture and positive culture for those working. It, you know, I was a labor organizer for many years, and for who manages a group of people often sets a tone, and it could be sometimes hard to have a different approach to something. Your own take, for example, in this case, in terms of what policing should be in 2023, if your manager has a different approach to it or your leader has a different approach to it. So I am really very much curious of what people are thinking. I want to convene people, most impacted people, the people who work in these departments, and really think through this stuff together to see what kind of leadership we need in our departments.
You know as well as I do that there are some people that blame the progressives for some of the policing problems we have today. Fair, not fair?
Well, you know, I look at politics in general, and really, if we zoom out, there are a lot of different kinds of progressives, there are a lot of different kinds of Democrats, and a lot of different kinds of Republicans. And so I think it's important to make space and understand that, especially in Vermont, people lead very differently and have different attitudes and approaches to governing. And so while I am very much a progressive, I think it, being consistent is an important value and quality that I hold. So I am a progressive because the values of the party really resonate with me, those of economic justice, social justice, and environmental justice. And those values do resonate with voters in Burlington. I've run on those issues successfully as a state representative twice. I represent half my district is in the New North End, half is in the Old North End. And those have been issues that people have supported since back when Bernie was mayor. How people choose to govern and their own takes on it is just how is the difference in every party. And so I encourage and hope that people will hear my approach on policy first, my long-time residency here in the state, the city, and then my take as, you know, a mom of two small kids. I have a lot in common with the people here of Burlington. And it's not about, I never think doing public service is a hard job, no matter who you are. And we all try to make the best decisions we have. I really do think that people's, that is their core interest in serving in government. But we all make decisions differently and we think about governing differently. So my take is those values are my core values as a progressive. And my policy approach is one of being pragmatic and listening and collaboration and not just driving what Emma thinks as the agenda forward.
Okay, but I didn't really hear you answer my question. Did the progressives miss fire on this issue, on the police issue?
You know, in 2020, there was a lot going on, obviously. So I think that many, especially white folks, were realizing for the first time that Black and Brown folks in this country are being killed and harmed by policing and have been for decades. There was a reckoning of realizing there's an urgency for which we've got to do something. We've got to take action. And what to do when you have such kind of an urgent pressure on you to figure out the right thing. I'm not sure how I would have responded in 2020 if I were in that spot. We were also right in the throes, about to be in the throes of a pandemic. It was an intense time, to say the least. I think we've learned a lot since then. We've learned a lot about what the right sizing of policing should be here in Burlington with the task force that they put together and then the report that came out. We've learned a lot about how to, again, go upstream and really understand issues of racial bias and how this shows up in policing. And again, back to partnering with the state, how is that showing up and how we are training police and educating police officers who are coming into our police departments. And so I think, I'm not sure how I would have voted then. So I I commend anyone going into public office. It's a very hard thing to do. And you get these binary votes of a yes, no. And there should be an asterisk probably on every single yes, no vote about would you have done it the same way again? And now that you know what you know 3 years later, who knows? But yeah.
I know people that are afraid, concerned to come to Burlington to shop. I know other people who say, you're making way too big a deal about this. You're blowing it out of proportion. What would you say to those two camps of people?
Well, I think fundamentally, safety is an important thing, whether it's perceived or real for folks. And I think that's both are happening in Burlington. So people need to feel safe. Local residents need to feel safe. Visitors need to feel safe. I think it's bigger than just people coming to shop. Like everyone who's walking down North Street, their kids to school should also feel safe. People who are in the throes of substance use disorder are also Vermonters and Burlingtonians and also should be safe. So I think we need to think again in this larger frame of community safety and be bringing things online that perhaps were not something we were willing to consider maybe a couple years ago, like overdose prevention sites, wraparound services that start to really empower and use those CSO officers and other folks in more creative ways. I think bringing on a CAHOOTS program, this is a program that was developed out on the West Coast long ago. Many cities have brought on this program, which is basically a response team related to mental health and other kind of emergency needs that don't require an armed police officer. We got a little bit forward with that, but then it fell apart, as I understand, with people wanting to expand it larger than Burlington. We need it in Burlington now. And so again, back to decisiveness, we need to make sure something's happening now and then it can grow from there. But there's an acute need. And so we need to move forward with some more urgency on that issue. So I think if we start bringing some of these programs online, that's going to start to help people not only be more safe in the who live here in Burlington, but those people who are unsafe to be able to get the needs that they need. And then from there, I think partnering and understanding what businesses need more specifically. I think businesses have had, there are other issues swirling around this as well in terms of economics, finding enough people to staff their stores, making sure that folks are finding livable wage paying jobs so they can afford to take those jobs and live somewhat reasonably close by, if not in Burlington. Those are other components that go into it. It is not, I worry when people tie something to only one particular topic. We have to understand the larger economic systems that are also changing how people shop, changing why stores are choosing to be open or closed in any particular city, and fundamentally just convene people so that people are able to sit side by side with policymakers and come up with the solutions together, and not just be policymakers trying to make it up over here on our own in a reactionary kind of way.
You've touched on this a lot. You've described a number of your core values. How would you describe, to somebody that doesn't know you, what are Emma Mulvaney Stanek's core values?
My core values are collaboration. My core values are about safety. They're about people feeling listened to. And they're about relationships, I would say. So I think it was all been informed by my career as a community and labor organizer. I think the community has wisdom within it when people are listened to and meaningfully engaged, and then you take action based on those people's feedback. I think that also creates safer communities overall, because it builds community, and it rebuilds community in the circumstances of Burlington right now, where people feel things have really become unraveled. And I just want people to know that we all have a role in this. This isn't about one mayor or one part of city government solving all these issues. It's really about everyone finding a role. We all have a role in this. And that goes back to that collaboration value that I really do center, is we can make the best and strongest and healthiest community if we all lean in and do our part.
Okay, I'm an average citizen here. I've lived here pretty close to 40 years. What's my role?
I think part of what needs to happen is we need to hear from everyone, right? We have to hear from people and give people opportunities to engage earlier on in the process, and not want just on the eve of a big critical decision, where often people are crammed into a 2-minute public comment period, and it's very transactional. It's very frustrating, I'm sure, for people to come and feel like all I get is 2 minutes. There's no back and forth with the city council or mayor in those spaces. I would love to revamp the neighborhood planning assemblies so that they are more accessible to working families and all folks, frankly, where people can come and there are vibrant agendas. There's lots of ways to engage. I don't want it to begin and end at the MPA, but I think that engagement model needs a facelift, if you will, in 2023 terms. So people who work multiple jobs or have small kids or just have different schedules have other ways they can engage with the city and elected folks. And I want people to bring their best ideas forward. I mean, we all are living in it. We're in our parts of the city. We're seeing, you know, what our neighborhoods are need. And I want to hear all those ideas from folks. I would just want to also encourage folks to think, what other issues do we really need Burlington to focus on in the next 3 years for this next mayor we're about to elect? Because yes, community safety should be the top priority, I think, for any mayoral candidate or city council candidate for that matter. But there are more underlying issues around affordability, economic justice for folks. We need a creative thinker. We need someone who has the ability to leverage state relationships in ways we haven't been doing adequately as a city to go forward. So I really hope that folks bring forward all the questions related to these bigger, broader, bigger system changes and challenges facing Burlington and Vermont, and engage with candidates so we hear what their thoughts are and what their priorities are.
Tell me an issue on economic justice. What are you talking about with that?
Well, not only affordability of housing, but affordability of municipal tax, affordability of childcare that you can find in the city of Burlington, affordability of other fees and just ways that people are basic needs that you're trying to pay for here in Vermont, and figuring out how the city can play a role in that. Again, be it in more active partnership with state policymakers, where we can push some bigger changes on healthcare, et cetera. I think we're starting to, because we've had to work on housing, but there's more there. I think we've created some frameworks, but I'm concerned, for example, on the home bill that we passed, which is changing some of the zoning requirements to make sure that people can't just use single family zoned units that could be multiple units. I'm worried for places like Burlington, where it could turn into a lot of investment properties for out of state landlords. I want to make sure that we're doing a Burlington lens there that starts to structurally think about creating affordability within our local zoning and policy work, so it doesn't become everyone just snatches up these houses and turns them into four-unit houses, which, yes, technically puts more housing into the housing market, but at what cost? So I think those are some examples.
Thank you. That wraps it up for this edition of 802 News, brought to you in part by Redhen Baking Company. Thanks for listening.